Chapter 11. Thecla. After we had sat, so it seemed to me, for a long time, though it was probably no more than a few moments, I could tolerate what I felt no longer. I went to the margin of the brook, and kneeling there on the soft earth, spewed out the dinner I had eaten with Vodalus. And when there was nothing more to come forth, I remained where I was, retching and shivering and rinsing my face and mouth, while the cold, clear water washed away the wine and half-digested meat I had brought up. When at last I was able to stand, I returned to Jonas and told him, "We must go." He looked at me as though he pitied me, and I suppose he did. Vodalus's fighting men are all around us. "You were not sick, I see, the way I was. But you heard who their allies are. Perhaps Chuniot was lying."
"I've heard our guards walking among the trees. They're not as silent as all that. You have your sword, Severian, and I have a knife, but Vodalus's men will have bows. I noticed that most of those who sat with us at table did. We can try to hide behind the trunks like Alawats."
I understood what he meant and said, "Alawats are shot every day."
"Still, no one hunts them by night. It would be dark in a watch or less."
"You will go with me if we wait until then?" I thrust out my hand. Jonas clasped it.
"Severian, my poor friend, you told me of seeing Vodalus and this Shadlane Thea and another man beside a violated grave. Didn't you know what it was they planned to do with what they got there?"
I had known, of course, but it had been a remote and seemingly irrelevant knowledge then. Now I found I had nothing to say, and indeed almost no thoughts at all, outside the hope that night would come quickly.
The men Vodalus sent for us came more quickly still. Four burly fellows, who might have been peasants and carried burnishes, and a fifth with something of the armiger about him, who wore an officer's padroon. Perhaps these men were in a crowd before the dais who had watched us arrive. At any rate, they seemed determined to take no risks with us, and surrounded us with their weapons at the ready, even while they hailed us as friends and comrades in arms. Jonas put as brave a face on it as a man could, and chatted with them while they escorted us down the forest paths. I could think of nothing but the ordeal ahead, and walked as I might have to the end of the world. Earth turned her face from the suns as we traveled. No glimmer of starlight seemed to penetrate the thronging leaves, yet our guides knew the way so well they hardly slowed. With each step I took, I wanted to ask if we would be forced to join in the meal to which we were led. But I knew without asking that to refuse, or even to seem to wish to refuse, would destroy whatever confidence Vodalus had in me, endangering my freedom and perhaps my life. Our five guards, who had talked only reluctantly at first in response to Jonas's jests and queries, grew more cheerful as I became more desperate, gossiping as if they were on the way to a drinking bout or a brothel. Yet though I recognized the note of anticipation in their voices, the jibes they made were as unintelligible to me as the banter of libertines is to a little child.
"Going far this time? Going to drown yourself again?"
This from the man at the back of our party, a mere disembodied voice in the dark.
"By Erebus, I'm going to sink so far you won't see me until winter."
A voice I recognized as belonging to the armiger asked, "Have any of you seen her yet?" The others had sounded merely boastful, but there was hunger of a kind I had never heard before behind his simple words. He might have been some lost traveler asking about his home.
"No, Waldgrave.
Another voice. Alkmund says a good one, not old or too young. Not another tribute, I hope. I don't... The voice broke off. Or perhaps I only stopped attending to what it said. I had seen a glimmer through the trees. After a few strides more, I could make out torches and hear the sound of many voices. Someone ahead called for us to halt, and the armiger went forward and gave a password softly. Soon I found myself sitting on forest duff, with Jonas on my right and a low chair of carved wood at my left. The armiger had taken a position on Jonas's right, and the rest of the people present, almost as though they had been waiting for our arrival, had formed a circle whose center was a smoky orange lantern suspended from the boughs of a tree. No more than a third of those who had been at the audience in the glade were there. But from their dress and weapons, it seemed to me that they were largely those of highest rank, together perhaps with members of certain favored fighting cadres. There were four or five men to every woman, but the women seemed as warlike as the men, and if anything, more eager for the feast to begin. We had been waiting for some time when Vodalus stepped dramatically out of the darkness and strode across the circle. All present stood, then resumed their seats as he dropped into the carved chair beside me. Almost at once, a man in the livery of an upper servant in some great house came forward to stand in the center of the circle beneath the orange light. He carried a salver with a large and a small bottle on it, and a crystal goblet. A murmuring began. Not a thing for words, I thought, but the sound of 100 little noises of satisfaction, of quick breathings and tongues on lips. The man with the salver stood motionless until this had run its course, then advanced toward Vodalus with measured steps. Behind me, the cooing voice of Thea said, "The Alzabo, of which I told you, is in the smaller bottle. The other holds a compound of herbs that soothe the stomach. Take one full swallow of the mixture." Vodalus turned to look at her with an expression of surprise. She entered the circle, passing between Jonas and me, and then between Vodalus and the man who bore the salver, and at last took a place at Vodalus's left. Vodalus leaned toward her and would have spoken, but the man with the salver had begun to mix the contents of the bottles in the goblet, and he seemed to think the moment inappropriate. The salver was moved in circles to impart a gentle swirling motion to the liquid. "Very good," Vodalus said. He took the goblet from the salver with both hands and raised it to his lips, then passed it to me. "As the chatelaine told you, you must take one full swallow. If you take less, the amount will be insufficient, and there will be no sharing. If you take more, it will be of no benefit to you, and the drug, which is very precious, will be wasted." I drank from the goblet as he had directed. The mixture was as bitter as wormwood and seemed cold and fetid. Recalling a winter day long before, when I had been ordered to clean the exterior drain that carried wastes away from the journeyman's quarters. For a moment I felt that my gorge would rise as it had beside the brook, though in truth, nothing remained in my stomach to come up. I choked and swallowed and passed the goblet to Jonas, then discovered that I was salivating rapidly. He had as much difficulty as I, or more, but he managed it at last and passed the goblet to the Walgrave, who had captained our guards. After that, I watched it make its slow way around the circle. It appeared to hold enough for 10 drinkers. When it was emptied, the man in livery wiped the rim,
filled the goblet again from the bottles on the salver, and started it once more. Gradually, he seemed to lose the solid form natural to a rounded object and became a silhouette only, a mere colored figure sawn from wood. I was reminded of the marionettes I had seen in my dream on the night I had shared Baldander's bed. The circle, too, in which we sat, though I knew it to contain 30 or 40 persons, seemed to have been cut from paper and bent like a toy crown. Vodalus on my left and Jonas at my right were normal, but the armiger appeared already half-pictured, as did Thea. As the man in livery reached her, Vodalus rose, and moving so effortlessly that he might have been propelled by the night breeze, floated toward the orange lantern. In the orange light, he seemed far away. Yet I could feel his gaze as one feels the heat from the brazier that readies the irons. "There is an oath to be sworn before the sharing," he said, and the trees above us nodded solemnly. "By the second life you are to receive, do you swear you will never betray those gathered here, and that you will consent to obey without hesitation or scruple to death if need be, Vodalus, as your chosen leader?" I tried to nod with the trees, and when that seemed insufficient, I said, "I consent." And Jonas, "Yes." "And that you will obey as you would Vodalus any person whatsoever whom Vodalus sets over you?"
"Yes."
"Yes." "And that you will put this oath above all other oaths, whether sworn before this time or after it?"
"We will,"
said Jonas.
"Yes," I said.
The breeze was gone. It was as if some unquiet spirit had haunted the gathering, then suddenly vanished. Vodalus was once more in his chair beside me. He leaned toward me. If his voice was slurred, I did not observe it. But something in his eyes told me he was under the influence of the Alzabo, perhaps as deeply as I was myself.
"I am no scholar," he began, "but I know it has been said that the greatest causes are often joined by the basest means. Nations are united by trade. The fair ivory and rare woods of altars and reliquaries by the boiled offal of ignoble animals, men and women by the organs of elimination. So we are joined, you and I. So will we both be joined a few moments hence to a fellow mortal who will live again, strongly for a time, in us, by the effluvia pressed from the sweetbreads of one of the filthiest beasts. So blossoms spring from muck." I nodded. "This was taught us by our allies, those who wait until man is purified again, ready to join with them in the conquest of the universe. It was brought by the others for foul purposes they hope to keep secret. I mention this to you because you, when you go to the House Absolute, may meet them, whom the common people call Cacogens, and the cultured Extrasolarians, or Hierojules. You must be careful in no way to bring yourself to their notice, because if they observe you closely, they will know by certain signs that you have used Alzabo." "The House Absolute."
Though only for an instant, the thought dispersed the mists of the drug.
"Indeed. I have a fellow there to whom I must transmit certain instructions, and I have learned that the troop of players to which you once belonged will be admitted there for a theassis a few days hence. You will rejoin them and take the opportunity to give what I shall give you.
He fumbled in his tunic.
To the one who shall say to you, the pelagic Argosy sights land. And should he give you any message in return, you may entrust it to whoever says to you, I am from the Quercen Penetralia. Liege, I said, my head is swimming.
Then lying,
I cannot remember those words. Truly, I have forgotten them already. Did I hear you say that Dorcas and the other will be in the House Absolute?
Vodalus now pressed into my hand a small object that was not a knife, yet was shaped something like one.
I stared at it.
It was a steel, such as flint is struck against to kindle fire.
You will remember, he said, and you will never forget your oath to me. Many of those you see here came, as they believed only once. But, sir, the House Absolute.
The fluting notes of a upanga sounded from the trees behind the farther side of the circle.
I must go to escort the bride, but have no fear. Some time past, you encountered a certain badger of mine.
Hildegrin, sir, I understand nothing.
He uses that name among others, yes. He thought it sufficiently unusual to see a torturer so far from the citadel, and talking of me, as to make it worthwhile to have you watched, though he had no notion you had saved me that night. Unfortunately, the watchers lost you at the wall. Since then, they have observed the movements of your traveling companions, in the hope you would rejoin them. I supposed that an exile might choose to side with us, and so save my poor Barnack long enough for us to free him. Last night, I myself rode into Saltus to speak with you. But I had my mount stolen for my pains and accomplished not a straw. Today, then, it was necessary that we take you by whatever means to prevent you from exercising your skills on my servant. But I still hoped you would make cause with us, and for that reason instructed the men I sent for you to bring you living to me. That cost me 3 and gained 2. The question now is whether the 2 will outweigh the 3.
Vodalus stood then a little unsteadily.
I thanked Holy Catherine that I did not have to stand as well, for I was sure my legs would not hold me. Something dim and white and twice the height of a man was sailing among the trees to the twittering of the upanga. Every neck craned to look at it, and Vodalus drifted to meet it.
Thea leaned across his empty chair to speak to me.
Lovely, is she not? They have accomplished wonders.
It was a woman seated on a silver litter borne on the shoulders of 6 men. For a moment I thought it was Thecla. It looked so like her in the orange light. Then I realized that it was rather her image, made perhaps of wax.
It is said to be perilous,
Thea cooed,
when one has known the shared in life. Memories held together may amaze the mind. Yet I, who loved her, will risk that confusion, and knowing from your look when you spoke of her, that you would desire it as well. I said nothing to Vodalus.
He had reached up to touch the figurine's arm as it was borne through the circle. With it entered a sweet and unmistakable odor. I recalled the agoutis served at our masking banquets, with their fur of spiced coconut and their eyes of preserved fruits,
I knew that what I saw was just such a recreation of a human being in roasted flesh. I think I would have gone mad at that moment if it had not been for the Alzabo. It stood between my perception and reality like a giant of mist, through which everything could be seen but nothing apprehended. I had another ally as well. It was the knowledge growing in me, the certainty that if I were to consent now and swallow some part of Thekla's substance, the traces of her mind that must otherwise soon fade and decay would enter me and endure, however attenuated, as long as I. Consent came. What I was about to do no longer seemed filthy or frightening. Instead, I opened every part of myself to Thekla and decked the essence of my being with welcome. Desire came too, born of the drug, a hunger no other food could satisfy. And when I looked around the circle, I saw that hunger on every face. The liveried servant, who I think must have been one of Vodalus's old household gone into exile with him, joined the six who had borne Thekla into the circle and helped lower the litter to the ground. For the space of a few breaths, their backs blocked my view. When they parted, she was gone. Nothing remained but smoking meats, laid upon what might have been a white tablecloth. I ate and waited, begging forgiveness. She deserved the most magnificent sepulchre, priceless marble of exquisite harmony. In its place, she was to be entombed in my torturer's workroom, with the floor scrubbed and the devices half disguised under garlands of flowers. The night air was cool, but I was sweating. I waited for her to come, feeling the drops roll down my bare chest and staring at the ground because I was afraid I would see her in the faces of the others before I felt her presence in myself. Just when I despaired, she was there, filling me as a melody fills a cottage. I was with her, running beside the Asis when we were a child. I knew the ancient villa moated by a dark lake, the view through the dusty windows of the Belvedere, and the secret space in the odd angle between two rooms where we sat at noon to read by candlelight. I knew the life of the Autarch's court, where poison waited in a diamond cup. I learned what it was for one who had never seen a cell or felt a whip to be a prisoner of the torturers, what dying meant, and death. I learned that I had been more to her than I had ever guessed, and at last fell into a sleep in which my dreams were all of her, not memories merely, memories I had possessed in plenty before. I held her poor, cold hands in mine, and I no longer wore the rags of an apprentice, nor the phylogen of a journeyman. We were one, naked and happy and clean, and we knew that she was no more and that I still lived. And we struggled against neither of those things. But with woven hair read from a single book, and talked and sang of other matters.